Hello everyone, this is Matt, and welcome to another episode of Takeout with Ashley Coff RD and Robin O'Brien, discussing better not perfect nutrition and the new food economy. Who's up for a food awakening? Today we have Crystal Washington on the show. When powerful companies want their teams to take action online, they book social media expert and dynamic speaker Crystal Washington, who has worked with Google, Microsoft, and others in the US, Africa, and Europe. For this comprehensive knowledge on social media, she has been interviewed by ABC, NBC, Fox, CBS, radio stations, magazines, and now Takeout with Ashley and Robin. Crystal is well known for her ability to take complex web and social media topics and make them easy to understand and accessible for everyday people and small business owners. With so much information these days on social media, Ashley, of course, has coined her phrase infobesity. We're always getting information from all types of sources, never sure what to believe, and it's too much. So today, Crystal's going to help us break it down. Looking forward to this one. Right, over to you, ladies.
Everyone. So this is an interesting time of year. I often look at the end of the first quarter, probably around tax time, spring hitting. And I check in with my patients and my members about, you know, where they are on the spectrum of their New Year's resolutions, because if people are following statistics, almost all people have gone off of their New Year's resolutions. And before I was doing that last week, I said, you know what, I'm going to sit down and go back to mine. And so it was a Sunday morning, and I said, it's a really good time before everybody's awake for me to just focus on myself. And, you know, so I woke up, I used this app for meditation, and I was great, and all things were moving forward. And I went to my computer, and my website was down. And then I tried to call someone, and that there was no way to reach a human being and tech support. And my poor team all lives on the West Coast, so they did get early morning Sunday wake-up calls. But I started to realize how just technology dependent I am. And it also, when I was able to later go back and look at my resolutions, which I did do about a day and a half later, I realized I haven't been holding myself accountable to doing things that are really important to me. Like the last year and a half, I've been learning the trumpet again and really picking that up. And I haven't been making the time for that and just some of the other things. So I was doing that check-in. But one of the things that really strikes me, Robin, is how today, you know, I'm just trying to find tips, tricks, strategies to not have technology just ruin my mood, right? Or on the flip side, like just shift, I guess it's not even ruin my mood, just shift my attention to a different place. And so when you suggested our guest today, I was like, oh, I'm so excited, because I think whether it's technology or whether it's social media, I really want to understand how, certainly as a practitioner, as a brand, I can use it to help enable. If I am a better health enabler for others, I want to make sure that I'm not using my social media to be a health deductor for them. And then from a personal standpoint, I got a lot of questions. So that's sort of where my mind came to when I was looking at who is on the docket today. Just very, very relevant.
I mean, and if you think about it, you know, there's so many examples of where technology can just create this incredible success story. But at the same time, it can also highlight a train wreck faster than anything. And I think recently, one of the best examples is, you know, Mylan and this EpiPen thing. I mean, that company has just had hit after hit after hit of just incredibly bad news and class action lawsuits. And now they've got this massive recall with the FDA. And the thing that I'm seeing and hearing over and over and over again is when you contact that company, it's like they have no plan in place. And I think our guest today, Crystal Washington, she is an expert in this space, and she really works with these corporations around the world to think through, you know, what is that action plan on social media? Because good news can hit just as fast as the bad news. And when it hits, you have to be able to step into action really quickly. It's something that we repeatedly see in the food industry. And I've interviewed companies like Annie's and Applegate. Particularly, I think what's the most interesting is when they have something hit that they didn't anticipate, that is not good. That's when you truly, I think, see the character and the strategy and the testing of a company and its leadership. And so, you know, Crystal has been in this space for some time. She is recognized as an expert globally in social media, and she's often brought in by these multinational corporations to really have them think through the social media strategy. And, you know, as we all know, I mean, this isn't really something that was in place 20 years ago. And, you know, now thankfully most companies are on board, but I'm sure that it took a while to get there. So Crystal, you know, I would love for you to share with our audience a little bit of your background and what brought you to this role as this incredible expert that you are today.
Well, you know, first off, I want to thank you for having me on the podcast. Really appreciative and excited. To make a long story as short as possible, my background is in the hospitality industry. And so that's where I worked in sales and marketing. And there was this little thing called social media that was popping up. And I'm talking about like MySpace days. Okay. So companies weren't using it yet. But I remember going to my boss, and at the time I'm in my early 20s. And I said to him, you know, there's this stuff called social media. And I really think we should investigate how we can use this as a company. Because if companies were to start using this thing, they can start building relationships with consumers, which they've never been able to do in history. And I was just so drawn by this concept. And again, this is before it was really happening on that level. And I remember my boss, you know, a middle-aged man, looked at me and said, look, kid, you make us tons of money. We've never had anybody in your position who makes us as much as you do. Stick to what you know. And I thought, oh, okay. And I really didn't think, oh, okay, but I'm giving you the edited version of what I thought. And so from there, I actually quit my job and started a digital marketing firm before it was really much of a thing in terms of using social media for marketing. And I started off with small businesses. And then after about a year, I started getting the attention of some pretty big brands. And so I had Google and British Airways and Microsoft contract with me to help them on some special projects when it came to using social media for business.
I love it. I love that there is that challenge. I mean, there always is that person that tries to marginalize or dismiss that you can either take the bait and fold, or you can take the bait and launch. And obviously you decided to launch. And I think it's remarkable that in that first year you were received by these like world-class, well-known corporations. And I'm wondering, you know, as you stepped into that, because a lot of people are, they sort of get pulled into this expertise or pulled into the role of teacher or leader. As you did, you know, how quickly were you able to assemble a team around that? And in those early years, as you were working with those companies, you know, are there still pieces of advice that you gave then that you would give today?
So I had to assemble a team just to manage it all. So that happened pretty quickly as the contracts came in. That's when I started to kind of build a team. What's interesting is now what I do has shifted considerably, because now over 92% of my business is actually professional speaking worldwide. So I speak on not really just social media, although social media is a part of it, but social media, big data, apps for sales, marketing, and productivity. The advice that I was giving out then that still holds through today, I think you kind of touched on it when you were talking about how you've interviewed companies like Annie's and some of these others. And, you know, really with social media, sometimes things come up that they're not expecting. And that's when you see the character of the brand. Well, the advice I used to give back then was, you know, you have to be authentic and you have to have a strong brand, because the larger your organization is, the culture really comes into play. And social media illuminates a company's culture, because when you're hit left field, and you're getting bad publicity, and you know you have to act timely, because with social media, it's all about how quick you can respond. Really, what we often see is the culture of a company. So if a company's culture is really yucky, that's going to come out in the response. But these companies that really do have a strong culture, that have a dedication to their customers and, you know, being good global citizens, many of them are able to respond very quickly and have it roll off their backs, because that's just who they are. Their intentions are good.
You know, I'm struck by something listening to you and sort of thinking about, you know, the evolution of the time that you've been involved in this and where we are with social media today. You know, the media, so first of all, for many people, where we are getting our news is social media. And so it really is this question of, do we even call it social media or is it the media? And then I think in particular, I'm curious about how, so I'm going to ask about if I was a media brand, but I also want to understand how, what consumers need to think about. So there's something interesting. If you're a media brand, share to the point that you were just making, sharing the news by way of social media is requires you to do things like, I'm just thinking in my head of like Twitter, you know, you're shortening your content, or you might not be spelling things correctly for, you know, in shortening things. But then you also have your brand, right? So your company's brand. And so how do you look at media brands, or how would you advise media brands today to navigate the social media space differently than, you know, certainly the someone like, you know, an individual using it, or an athlete, you know, or someone whose business isn't the news?
If I'm understanding your question correctly, it sounds like you're asking what should media companies be aware of, or what advice I would give to them that sets them apart from the everyday user. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Very, oh, no, yeah. No worries. I just want to make sure I'm on the same page.
Yeah.
So I would say the main thing is that the media, actual traditional media journalists, they have a stronger commitment to truth. You have a responsibility to ensure that you are actually giving news, not opinion, not clickbait, not shortening a title so that it reads as being controversial, but then when people click in it, it's not what it's about at all. Because unfortunately, a lot of people read titles, not content. I'm not excusing that behavior, but I think responsible journalists understand that that journalism itself is a craft. And sometimes you have to make a decision between getting that ad revenue, meaning those click-throughs, and actually putting out a strong think piece or a good piece of substantive information. And I'm not sure that all media outlets are doing the latter.
You know, I mean, I look at social media today, and especially in the food industry, you've got a lot of different voices covering the same story from a lot of different angles. And you kind of go back 20 years and, you know, some platforms do it in a very kind of national inquirer way. Some mm-hmm. platforms present it like the Wall Street Journal. Some platforms are going to present it like USA Today. And you really are starting to see that diversity in social media the same way you would see that diversity on the newsstand. And in a way, I think that's fine, because we don't all take our news the same way, just the same way we don't all take our food the same way. And to have these different platforms for different people, what I think is interesting and what has been lost in the process, and I would love for you to touch on this, is, you know, there was a journalism degree or something that came with it, you know, as you got into journalism. One of my sisters did a master's in journalism. I don't know if we have that yet. You know, is there a master's in social media yet? You know, is that something that will develop? Is it something that you're seeing a curriculum based around this?
I think we're starting to see more and more of a curriculum based off of it. I don't know if there's a master's of social media. I would imagine it would need to be a lot more broad than that. And the reason why I say that is because social media fits neatly under marketing and communications. And so people that look at it as a standalone, it's almost like people majoring in the telephone. Does that make sense?
Do you see where I'm going? Yeah, totally. That's a great way to frame it.
It's a medium for which you're using to communicate. So it comes under communications. It can come out under a few different marketing as well, depending on how you're utilizing it. But it's not a standalone thing. And that's a conversation I tend to have quite frequently with small businesses because they think, oh, I need a social media strategy. No, what you need is a marketing strategy. And your social media strategy supports the marketing strategy you have in place.
Here is a quick word from our sponsor.
Hi, it's Ashley. I just wanted to thank Nature's Path for sponsoring the Takeout Podcast. We love partnering with them because they're a family-run, fiercely independent, sustainably driven, and deliciously healthy organic food company. They believe in leaving the earth better than they found it, and that's something they've been doing for over 30 years. There's so many different products to check out, a whole range of organic breakfast cereals, granolas, and snack bars. I'm a big fan of their superfood bars. There are these really tasty coconut and nut bars that make great snacks for any time of day. I always have one with me so that I have better nutrition on the go.
Now back to Takeout with Ashley and Robin.
Yeah, and it makes me think about, you know, one of the things I certainly have looked at it as my own business, but more often in conversation with companies that want to interact, and also me trying to talk to them about what are our opportunities for education and how people interact with social media, is really understanding how to evaluate the ROI for your social media, for the, you know, whether it's, you need, some people feel that if there is a platform out there, they need to be on it, right? And other people are investing in just one, or, you know, and many people feel, myself included, like we're chasing, you know, the changes that are always happening at Facebook or, you know, some of these others. So I guess I would love to know sort of what are your top tips for how to evaluate the ROI how to evaluate the ROI.
That's a really good question. And I think it's a very smart question. It's a question I wish everybody would ask, because we're wasting so much time using tools that could be valuable, but either we're not using the right way or we're using the wrong amount of tools. So first thing I'll say, if I can just draw a parallel, most of us can be members of, let's say, 5 to 10 professional and or nonprofit organizations, right? But we're not members of 5 to 10 because we don't have the time to do it. If we did it, we'd be spread thin. We wouldn't be making the impact that we'd want to make. We wouldn't be building the relationships because we'd be everywhere. Social media is the exact same way. I tell people, yes, there are all these different platforms. Yes, there's always something new. But for most individuals and even companies, I say, really, most of them should choose maybe two platforms to master. Now, if you're one of these huge, huge, huge corporations, that's a little different, because a lot of them actually have several full-time staff members dedicated to monitoring this media. And that's fine. That's perfect in that case. But for most of us, we really should probably be on two max. Occasionally, I'll tell a company maybe three, depending on what it is. And that way, when you're on there, you're fully utilizing it. You're staying ahead of the changes, which is something you mentioned, because people do feel overwhelmed. They're constantly changing. If you're on 6 different platforms, good luck. That's, you know, keeping up with all of that. In terms of ROI, I think that people don't even understand how measurable it can be with social media. But you have to have your systems in place so that you can measure it. So, for instance, let's look at it from a business standpoint. If you're on social media because you're trying to drive sales, the whole purpose of getting people on social media is so that you can drive them to your website or drive them to take some type of offline action. The trick is, if you're driving them to your website, having things in place so that you can see where your traffic's coming from and then what their next behaviors are and if they're actually doing the things you want them to do. You can track and see how many people came from Facebook, visited your site, and bought something within the next year. Newspaper organizations, I've actually worked with some of those before, they track this kind of information as well. If it's a brick and mortar situation where you're wanting people to show up to an event or show up to a store, simply asking people how they heard about you and keeping record of that. So it, from a business standpoint, and even some nonprofits, it can be very measurable. It's just that we don't all have the systems and the practices in place so that we're actually measuring it.
You know, and listening to you talking about, you know, are you going to tackle two or three things? Or are you going to spread yourself too thin and tackle too many platforms? And then again, you know, depending on which platforms are important to which organizations or people, I mean, it really, there's a whole diverse set of solutions that are available there. But I want to circle back to something that you touched on earlier, Crystal, and that is that about 90% of your time now is as a public speaker. So you are on the road a lot, and I follow you on Facebook, and you truly, it's incredible how far and how fast and how wide you're able to travel and get this message out. And one of the things that I just have huge respect for is your dedication, your commitment to your own health as you do this. And so I want to touch on that a little bit too. As this whole platform exploded and you took off and you began the travel, when or where was it that you kind of had this moment where you realized you really had to take care of yourself in this kind of vehicle that you're riding in order to keep doing and delivering the best performances that you could as a speaker?
Well, you know, near the beginning of this really launching, I started my professional relationship with my therapist. But my therapist was holistic, if that makes sense. And so one of the things that we kind of charted out that was part of my plan was I needed to practice self-care as I did this. You can't travel all the time and not take care of yourself and think that you're going to be in good condition. For instance, last year I took over 100 domestic flights for business. And on top of that, because I just love travel, on my own time, because I actually still have that, believe it or not, I saw 9 countries in 1 U.S. territory. So jumping on and off all those planes, sleeping on all these different types of beds, being exposed to all these different types of foods and allergens and all these different things, there's a few key things that you kind of have to do. And so for me, water's a big one. Every day I try to drink 2 liters of water. I'm a vegetarian. I've been a vegetarian even before I started speaking. And so that, well, as you know, being a vegetarian isn't necessarily healthy because, you know, cheese pizza is vegetarian, but it's not necessarily a healthy choice. But I do make an effort to eat healthy on the road. And so, you know, oftentimes I find myself eating more salads. And even when I don't see something on a menu, like a room service menu at the hotel, I've learned that oftentimes I can just tell room service, you know, look, I'm a vegetarian and I would just love it if your chef could just send me some vegetables, any vegetables with carrots, because I just really don't like carrots, y'all. And what I've learned is that oftentimes the chefs are excited, they're happy to help, and they get to create something new. So they're bored down there in the kitchen. So they're like, huh, let's put together some kind of cool vegetables, you know, dish. So that's a big piece of it, too. Outside of the food piece, oftentimes I travel with my magic bullet so I can do my little protein shakes in the morning. I get enough sleep. I exercise in the exercise rooms when I'm at hotels. And I find it's easier to be consistent on the road than it is at home because I don't really have an excuse when all I have to do is take an elevator downstairs. And the last piece of that is I do additional care to take care of my body. So, for instance, my chiropractor started me to traveling with a TENS machine. So I use that on the plane so I don't have tight muscles when I land. And I make sure that I get at least 1 massage a month. I see my therapist once a month and I see my chiropractor once a month. So that's, I hope that doesn't sound like, you know, I know that's quite a bit, but hopefully that kind of answered your question.
You know, it's something that really jumps out at me as a provider, and it's something as a healthcare provider, and something I actually had to certainly in learning this for myself, but also in talking to my patients. I used to think that, you know, monotony or doing the same thing was actually going to be something that could be problematic, right? And I do think there are times where we see that. If you're eating the same thing all the time and you get bored, you're going to find something that you find exciting. Mm-hmm. But, you know, one of the things that I think is so powerful about what you're talking about is actually the opposite is also true. By having your go-tos and being so clear about, especially when you're on the road where all of these other factors are up in the air, you're really doing a great job of being able to avoid decision fatigue during your travel, which is fatiguing enough, right? Travel. Right. And who knows the quality of the bed and all that stuff. And so I think there's so many people that can benefit from what you're talking about. And I have seen in my patients that focusing, especially for people who travel consistently, who travel frequently, really focusing on a very specific regime when you travel is one of your better health enablers. It's really such a key thing. So in that, and with the notion that you travel and you do all of these things and you've got your health practice, one of the things that I didn't hear in there was, this is what I do on social media on a daily basis. And so I'm curious about your own personal social media behaviors. If you have one social media practice that you do most frequently, or if there's, if you have any sort of rules that you follow for yourself.
Well, you know, one of the interesting things is that I'm one of those people that fights monotony. And I naturally kind of go towards not really chaos, but if I had to sit at a desk every day and do the exact same job, that just I would be on television and not for something good. I'd probably just, you know, kind of have a moment in there. So I need a little, you know, switching things up. And so with social media, I spend the most amount of my time on Facebook, but even with that, normally I'd say I probably spend maybe 15 minutes to 30 minutes a day on social media on average. Some days I might spend a little bit more. Some days I might spend a little bit less. But I really post not on a regular schedule. I post according to what's going on in the world. I think that you know, if I have something encouraging, I put that there. But I don't give tech tips on a schedule just to give tech tips on a schedule. I see something that's come out. I see something that's useful, and I share it at the time. And so I think that's one of the things that some of the people that are connected with me appreciate, the fact that I'm not just filling, you know, their timelines with stuff just so that you see me. If something's important, I put it there. But there's tech stuff that other people talk about that I do not talk about because I look at myself as a technology translator. So most of the people I'm communicating with in my speaking and the ones that follow me aren't techies. And so they don't need to see every little thing. I try to bring just the important stuff they should be aware of.
You know, I love that. I mean, you're really digesting and processing the information and delivering the relevant content. And it makes me think a lot. And, you know, I mean, obviously, I know the food industry really well, and I'm curious if the same patterns happen across these other industries that you work with. But one of the things that we've seen really heavily recently in the food industry is the use of these influencers. And some of the more savvy brands are really moving away from that, kind of these pay-to-play campaigns, and really have gone to tapping the experts and not just, you know, not just going at it for sheer numbers. Is the same thing happening in other industries? What are you seeing there?
It really depends on the industry, because all industries don't embrace technology at the same rate. And so about 70% of my speaking is done across three industries, travel and tourism, building and real estate, and then financial services. These are industries that aren't the first to embrace this technology. Of the three, I would say travel and tourism is the one that's most in front. And I think with them, they're still kind of slightly in the older paradigm, but that's because of the nature of what they do. So it works for them. So again, I work across different industries. I'm trying to think of a good example. Where the fashion and merchandising industry is light years away from where concrete contractors and the building industry is. Does that make sense?
Totally.
So I can't give you an across the board answer because they're in totally different places. It's almost like having, imagine having four brilliant children, but they're all 5 years apart. Doesn't mean they're not all as smart as the next, but they're different ages. And so they adopted at different times. And so their rate of adaption to new things, it shifts accordingly.
You're going to be doing this for a while because, I mean, the spectrum really is constantly evolving. And I totally get it. I mean, I came out of the finance industry, and the food industry is a totally different character. And so to be working across these different industries, it's got to be fascinating, because I would think you would find different issues, opportunities, and challenges depending on the category that you're in.
Oh, totally. I mean, when you're looking at financial services, we're dealing with SEC issues. And so the information I'm giving them, the advice, the tactics, the strategies I'm giving them are completely different than what I give people that are in real estate, who have a lot more flexibility, which is totally different than what I give my clients in healthcare, because now we have other laws, privacy laws as well. So yeah, it's very different across industry, but I love that because remember, I'm that person that doesn't like monotony. So I need this difference. Some speakers specialize in one specific industry. I would never be that person because I love the variety.
It's so fascinating to think about, just in that space of variety. One of the things that I'm fascinated by what you do and how you're doing it. So I'll start off in that space. And one of the things when I was reading about your bio is really looking at, you were just talking about the scope of different clients, but also I was looking at the age range, or if we will, the generation, right? So this Generation Y versus the baby boomers. And I'm really curious about if you are trying to, so if you were working with clients in that space, how do you differ your, I would imagine that Gen Yers use social media differently than baby boomers. And that may be a very a gross stereotype, but I think there's probably I imagine there's truth to that. But then how do you train them differently?
Well, I think one of the things you have to do, oftentimes when I'm talking to a group where it goes across several generations, because sometimes occasionally you'll get a group where it really is almost all one generation. That happens sometimes. But if I see a lot of different generations in the room, I actually take a segment of my talk to talk about generational differences in technology use. And the reason why it's important to do that is we have to acknowledge everyone in the audience. And it's important to understand that while people don't always neatly fit into their generations, there are some generational traits. So for instance, baby boomers tend to be a little bit more resistant, and they also tend to feel that younger people are better at technology. And that's not actually the case. Younger people aren't innately better at technology. They didn't just pop out of the womb, wah, and now they can use an iPad. That's not how this works, even though it looks that way. I actually created a timeline that shows different types of technology that we use over time, starting in the early 1900s or so, going all the way down to today on one side, and the ranges of each generation on the other side. And on this chart, what they immediately notice when it comes up is that as you go down the chart, more and more things are invented more closely together. And it looks really crazy because there's only a few things at the top and then it just goes nuts and there's tons of stuff. And what I explain to baby boomers is it's not that you're less technology capable. It's that younger people have had to adapt more. So I tell them I'm a Gen Y or a millennial, and I'm an old millennial, meaning I'm almost a Gen X. And in my lifetime, with my own hands, I have used 8-tracks, records, cassette tapes, CDs, MP3s, Apple Music. And as I say that, they get it. I said, so I'm used to adapting. So if something changes, I'm like, oh, okay, I don't know why Facebook looks this way today. Let me figure out what just happened. Meanwhile, if my mother logs into Facebook and the page looks different, she's going to go, ah, and freak out. So acknowledging that first kind of helps everybody, because then the baby boomers are like, oh, we are smart. They just have a different attitude. Also, younger people are not as afraid to mess stuff up. So when you're learning something new, you're going to make some mistakes. And I tell baby boomers to make sure that you allow for that. On the flip end, what I also explain to the younger generations, and I do acknowledge Gen X a little bit, but I kind of have to hit extremes. What I tell younger generations is baby boomers are actually in a prime place to use social media, because these are the people who have collected the most experience in the workplace. They tend to be the best at relationship building and networking because they've been doing it longer. And so social media, all they have to do is learn how to do that with technology, but they have the knowledge. Some of the younger kids right out of college, they don't have the business savvy. So they're using these tools, not really knowing what they're doing with them, and sometimes hurting themselves. So when you acknowledge that everyone in the room has something to offer and you're showing the technology differences between them, but how they can work together well as a team, it balances out. And now everyone's open to hear what your suggestions are.
Oh, I think that is just an amazing way of thinking about it. And I really love that notion of taking a moment and actually talking about how we all use things differently. I think that applies across category to bring in everybody in the room. That is fantastic. So I want to, by way of that, I want to transition us into our rapid fire round of questions, because I know that Robin and I could literally sit here and pick your brain and talk about this for, we just find it fascinating. But I do want to be respectful of time. And so in shifting, you know, I sit here and I listen to you. And one of the things that I really appreciate is how keenly aware, self-aware you are. You talked about the things that you know that you need to do. And you also talked about how there are, you know, within your, how personally, you know that you also need to have a variety of things to do. And you don't want to be sitting behind a desk and all the things. So you figured out a lot about yourself and how to put yourself in a space to be as successful as you are. So I'm wondering, looking backwards, is what is the greatest obstacle that you've overcome?
Here is a quick word from our sponsor.
We'd like to thank Nature's Path for sponsoring today's podcast. Nature's Path is a family-owned and operated food company that we are so proud to work with at Takeout with Ashley and Robin. Nature's Path has been leading the conversation around organic and sustainable food systems for more than 30 years, and we are so proud to call them a friend.
Now back to Takeout with Ashley and Robin.
The greatest obstacle I've overcome has been me, because what people don't tell you when you're starting a business is that whatever personal issues you have, any insecurities, any leftover family stuff, it will show up in your business. And so I think I'm very thankful that, you know, I am someone who believes in therapy and surrounding yourself with people who, as one of my mentors says, loves you enough to tell you when your slip is showing. Because it's enabled me to learn over time to heal certain places so that my business runs better. As an example, you know, I know people who are shy and scared when it comes to asking about money, or they don't know their own value. And I tend to see this a little bit more with women. I'm not saying all women do this, and I'm not saying men aren't capable. But oftentimes I find that small business owner women that are just starting off, they tend to be shy about their value, and they don't want to be construed as being mean or aggressive. Well, how does that come up in your business? You're going to have some people not paying you. You're going to have a hard time negotiating. You're going to leave money on the table when you're delivering more value. And so that's what I mean by, you know, I had to overcome my own issues. I was most certainly my biggest obstacle.
I love that. And from that, when you were thinking about and trying to figure out how you are able to look at you and overcome those pieces, I imagine there are many people or a few that really stick out that really inspired you. So I'm curious who inspires you and why.
Oh, there's so many people. I have several mentors. And I believe you in having multiple mentors, but having them mentor you in only the space that they're an expert in. So, for instance, you can have someone that is an amazing financial guru as your mentor, and they could have a completely horrible and jacked up marriage. Do not make them your all around mentor, because once they start giving you marriage advice, you're going to join them in a very bad place. I definitely have different mentors. There's a lot of people that have put out some great content that I really enjoy. Actually, I think one of them, you might have done a podcast with. So Timothy Ferris, his book, The 4-Hour Workweek, was one of the first books that I read when I quit my job to start my business. And that really shifted how I looked at delegating and automating things. So he was one really big one. But there's honestly a ton. Side note, related, not related, I don't know. I'm one of the biggest Maya Angelou fans whatsoever. I have her books, but I listen to her audiobooks so much that my husband does an amazing Maya Angelou impersonation.
That's great. You know, and I am halfway through Tim Ferriss's book right now. I just recently got it. And I 100% agree with the impact that he made. You know, I don't know why I let it sit on the shelf for so long, but it's just really, it's an incredible productivity hack. And, you know, my husband had thought, oh, is it just for the entrepreneurs? Is somebody who's in a corporation, you know, can they use it too? I mean, it's just got great insight for all the little excuses that you can make in your own head about why you should or shouldn't be doing something. And it just hacks right through it and enhances productivity regardless of where you are. He's somebody we'd love to have on the show. I think it's great that you highlighted him. And, you know, I think about it, Crystal, I mean, there's a lot going on right now with the internet, with privacy laws, you know, there's a lot going on. Mm-hmm. And if you had the opportunity, what one message would you send to Congress?
Oh my goodness. Woo. I would say, I would really encourage them to look to some of our neighbors in Europe and see what they're doing to protect their citizens. You know, I understand there's a lot of money to be made out of farming out data and big data in general and selling data. But at the end of the day, we have to protect our citizens. And I definitely think that we are not doing all that we should to do it.
Well said. I agree. You know, we see the same in the food industry where in Europe, they take a more of a precautionary stance in the food industry as well. And I think those standards absolutely protect the health of citizens, whether we're talking about the physical health or the online health. There really is a lot of opportunity to do better. So I hope you get that opportunity one day. You should. I mean, your expertise is incredible and so far reaching. So now we're going to totally twist it. If you were a food, what would you be?
Avocado.
Okay. You got to share why.
I don't know. I just love avocados. I eat them every single day. I just had one before I got on here with you. I have an avocado tree. I love avocados.
Oh, that's awesome.
I love that you're like, I don't know, but I just know I would be an avocado.
That is my truth. It's a healthy fat. That's
I mean, still good for you.
Totally. Oh my gosh, I have learned so much from you. And so first of all, I've learned so much from you in your area of expertise. And I have to tell you, I've also learned so much from you external to that and really in a lot of the work that I do. So this is such a gift. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Crystal, really, thank you so much for taking the time. We're just thrilled to share this with our audience. Thank you for being such an incredible advocate in this space. I'm really grateful for your work, and I know that all of our listeners will be too. So thanks so much for making the time.
Thank you, Robin. I really appreciate it. And Ashley, it's been wonderful chatting with you.
Likewise. I hope our paths cross. And do consider that DC component. Let me know, you know, reach out if by any chance you get the opportunity to come speak here. But also if you just get curious about coming and having that conversation, happy to help enable it.
Interesting. I'll have to check you out because I'm definitely in DC several times a year speaking at conferences.
Good. I love it. Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks, Crystal. Thanks, Ashley and Robin. Enlightening podcast as always. Right. It never stops here. Takeout with Ashley and Robin. Next week, we have David Essel on the show. David is a number one selling author 9 times, counselor, master life coach, and international speaker whose mission is to positively affect 1 million people or more every day in every area of life, regardless of their circumstances. Wow, sounds like a good cause to me. He's worked for 38 years doing this. So if there's ever an expert, it's David. Well, looking forward to that one. So until next week, I'll see you then.